Good morning and greetings in Christ's name this morning. I was really moved by the last song we sang. The songwriter said, "Oh, let my hand forget her skill, my tongue be silent, cold and still, this bounding heart forget to beat if I forget the mercy seat." It's almost graphic words, but he's saying there, I believe, that if we forget that it's because of the mercy of God that we are here, and that we are living, then we might as well be dead. We might as well be lifeless, because really we are lifeless without the mercy and grace of God. So just bless me to hear those words again. It's good to be here this morning. I'm to introduce the message this morning, I'd like to ask you a question I want you to think about, and then I'm going to come back to it in a little bit. The question is, what does the skeleton of a dead man have to do with his faith? What does the skeleton of a dead man have to do with his faith? So I'll come back to that in a little bit. But 6 weeks ago, I preached a message here about Joseph forgiving his brothers and how Joseph's life was and is a beautiful example of forgiveness. Joseph forgave his brothers on the deepest level of his heart. It was a sincere forgiveness. It wasn't just words, it was real. So that's about a 30-second summary of that sermon. In Genesis 50, in verses 20 and 21, Joseph said this, "But as for you," he was talking to his brothers, "ye thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive. Now therefore fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones." And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. Joseph revealing himself to his brothers and extending forgiveness to them in chapter 45 of Genesis is the climax of the story of Joseph and his family. But the story doesn't end there. There's five more chapters in Genesis. After that, Joseph sent his brothers back to Canaan with wagons to bring his family, all of the children, all of their possessions into Egypt. And finally, after 22 years of being separated from his father, Jacob, Joseph is reunited with his father. Joseph arranged for the Israelites to settle in the land of Goshen. And the famine continued for 5 years. The money runs out in Egypt. There's no more money to buy grain, so the people are starving. Joseph said, bring me your cattle. I will sell you grain. I'll give you grain for your cattle. We can read about that in those chapters. And then finally, when the cattle ran out, the people had used up all their cattle. He said, "I will give you grain for your land." And that's found in chapters 47. Jacob lived in Egypt for 17 years before he died. And in chapter 47, when Jacob was close to his death, he called Joseph and he made him swear to him that he would take him back to Canaan when he died, take his body back to Canaan where Abraham and Isaac were buried, and there bury him with them. And Joseph promised to do that. In chapter 49, Jacob called his sons and pronounced his final words on each of them and then yielded up the ghost and was gathered unto his people, the scriptures tell us. In chapter 50, Joseph had Jacob's body embalmed. They had a time of mourning for 70 days before they took him back to Canaan, where they mourned 7 more days before burying him in the cave of the field of Machpelah. The field that Abraham had bought. It would be interesting to spend some time in some of those chapters and to look at some of those things. But I am planning, Lord willing, that this is the last message, the last sermon on this series that I've been preaching on Joseph. So hopefully you've been thinking about the question that I asked you. I want to come back to that now. What does the skeleton of a dead man have to do with his faith? Do you have any input on that? I'm thinking of a verse. Give me a verse in the scripture. Okay, that's the verse I wanted. Let's turn to Hebrews 11. Thank you for that, Joel. In Hebrews 11, we have this great chapter of the men and women of faith. And in Hebrews 11, verse 22, we have this verse. By faith, Joseph, when he died, made mention of the departing of the children of Israel and gave commandment concerning his bones. Now turn with me to Genesis chapter 50. I'd like to read a few verses from there. Genesis chapter 50, verse 22 to the end. And Joseph dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's house. And Joseph lived 110 years. And Joseph saw Ephraim's children of the third generation. The children also of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were brought up upon Joseph's knees. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I die, and God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land unto the land which he sware to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And Joseph took an oath of the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and ye shall carry up my bones from hence. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. Now I should read a few more passages, just to while we're reading these scriptures. Exodus chapter 13. Exodus chapter 13, verse 19. We are now 400 years roughly from when Joseph told his descendants that they were to carry his bones back to the land of Canaan when they left Egypt. He said, surely God is going to visit you. Now we're at that time. Exodus chapter 13, verse 19. And Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had straitly sworn the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and ye shall carry up my bones away hence with you. And then finally in Joshua chapter 24, verse 32, there's another verse I want to read. Joshua 24, verse 32, and the bones of Joseph, which the children of Israel brought up out of Egypt, buried they in Shechem, in a parcel of ground which Jacob bought of the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of silver, and it became the inheritance of the children of Joseph. So, Joseph, approximately 500 years after Joseph had wandered this same ground, had spent time on this same ground as a child, as a boy. 500 years later, he was finally buried in that same ground. If you remember, the area of Shechem was where Joseph's brothers had been when he went to see them, to find them, to check on how they were doing before they had sold him into Egypt. But 500 years later, his bones are buried there. Now, again, back to Hebrews 11, as I mentioned, it's a list of the great men and women of faith. And with each of these men and women is listed something that they did that showed that they had faith in God. For instance, by faith, Noah moved with fear and built an ark. And by faith, Abraham, it tells us, obeyed when God called and left his father's house. By faith, Rahab hid the spies when they came to her house. She hid them. And it says, by faith, Joseph made mention of Israel, leaving Egypt, and commanded his descendants that they would take his bones with them when the time would come to leave. Now, the question that I have is, why of all of the great works of Joseph did the writer of Hebrews choose Joseph's request about his bones to demonstrate his faith? If I would have been writing Hebrews 11, I would have written something like, by faith, Joseph overcame the temptation of Potiphar's wife and refused to sin against God. Or maybe, by faith, Joseph interpreted Pharaoh's dream, was promoted, and saved the nation of Egypt. Or by faith, Joseph shunned bitterness and revenge and chose to forgive his brothers. This morning, I would like to think about why the Holy Spirit saw fit to define the faith of Joseph by his command to have his bones carried out of Egypt. Somewhat strange, isn't it? But I believe the scriptures have something to tell us about that. So first of all, I'd like to think about Joseph's request, that it demonstrated that he believed the promise of God. I find faith somewhat hard to define. Hebrews 11 here tells us that it's in verse 4, I believe it is. No, verse 1. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. That's what the Hebrew writer tells us. But he also goes on to show us the great faith that these men and women had by the things that they did, by the way that they lived their lives. And to me, that is the best way to define faith. It's best defined by works, not by words. And in each of these great men and women in Hebrews 11, their faith is defined not by spelling out their theology here in Hebrews 11, but by telling us what they did to prove their faith in God. But this one of the simplest definitions that I can give you of faith is this. It's faith is living and acting in a way that demonstrates that I believe what God has said. That's simple. That's probably one of the simplest definitions that I can give you. And that's what Joseph did when he commanded that the children of Israel take his bones along with them when they leave Egypt. His request about his bones showed that he believed the promise that God had made to his great-grandfather Abraham. God had made a covenant with Abraham that he would make him a great nation and that he would give his seed to the land. He would give to his seed the land of Canaan for a possession forever. He said in Genesis chapter 17, I will establish my covenant between me and thee and thy seed after thee in their generations for an everlasting covenant to be a God unto thee and to thy seed after thee. And I will give unto thee and to thy seed after thee the land wherein thou art a stranger, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. And God said unto Abraham, thou shalt keep my covenant, therefore thou and thy seed after thee in their generations. The words in their generations are used here several times. This covenant was passed on from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob and finally to Joseph. It was important to them. They believed that God was going to keep his end of the covenant. They believed that God was going to keep his word. That's why they passed it on from generation to generation. And now it had finally come to Joseph's generation. It was his time to demonstrate that God would keep his word. It was his turn to keep the covenant alive for the generations that were coming after him. But here they were, the children of Israel, they were living in Egypt. And God had said, I'm going to give you the land of Canaan. They were living in Egypt, far from the land that God had promised to them. Joseph, I believe, saw the danger of being integrated into Egypt and the covenant that God had made with his people being forgotten. And he chose to do something very tangible to keep this covenant alive, very practical, very earthly. He said, I want you to take my bones with you when you go to Canaan. I want you to keep my bones and be ready to take them along. God is surely going to visit you and take you out of this place. Here are my bones. Keep them and take them with you when God does that. Something tangible, something very, again, earthly that they had to remind them that he believed that God was going to keep his promise. So for the next 400 years, Joseph's bones were a testimony to the Israelite that God was surely going to keep his word. In Hebrews 11, verse 4, it tells us about Abel that by it he being dead yet speaketh. Well, the same could be said about Joseph. His dead bones kept speaking to his descendants that God would surely keep his word, keep his covenant. The dead bones of Joseph testified of his living faith. It wasn't only dead bones, but it was a testimony of a faith that was real and a faith that was living. So I'd like to make some application to us. Most of us, like Joseph, have been blessed to have faith that has been passed down to us from the generations before us. Our fathers, our grandfathers, our great-grandfathers have believed that what God has said, he will do. And yet each of us must personally choose to embrace that faith and intentionally demonstrate it through our actions. None of us are asking this morning that our children preserve our bones and carry them to another place, like Joseph did, as a demonstration that we believe God. Yet if our faith is going to be real, then there's going to be physical, tangible evidence coming out of our lives that testifies to that reality. Our children are going to need to see faith lived out. They're going to need to see real, tangible actions. That's what's going to make an impact. In our Sunday school lesson, we were talking about the Hebrew children, and the question came up, would have it been okay for them to bow down, and yet in their hearts they would not be worshiping the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up? Would have that been okay? They did not compromise on their faith. They stayed standing. They made it real. They made it tangible. They made it physical. The entire world could see that they were not going to bow down to that man. If they would have bowed down to that image, they would have. Brother Chester Weaver talked to us about dualism this summer. That's what would have been happening to them. They would have separated what they believed from the way that they lived, but they chose to make that one package, and that's what we need to do with our faith. It's not faith and works. It's faith that produces works. It's not one without the other. Faith and works is one package. So our children need to see that in our lives. And we have been very blessed to be part of a people who have emphasized discipleship and living out what Jesus has taught us to live. Living out his commands, but merely being part of that group is not enough. The continuation of that is only going to happen, is only going to keep going as we deliberately and physically live in a way that shows that we believe every word that God has said. And that's a high calling. Now, Joseph essentially hinged his faith on one promise that God had made to his great-grandfather Abraham. And I'd just like to ask you, if that one promise was enough for him to have great faith in God, how much more does God expect us to have faith? We who live under the glory of the new covenant, Peter tells us that according as his divine power hath given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness, we don't only have one promise like Joseph had to hang on to in the old covenant, but we have all things that pertain unto life and godliness through the knowledge of him that has called us to glory and virtue, whereby are given unto us exceeding great and precious promises, that by these ye might be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust. We have been given all things, exceeding great and precious promises, and God expects to come out of our lives a demonstration to the world and to our posterity, to our descendants, that we believe these great and precious promises. It's not going to be theology in our heads only, but it's going to be defined by the works that we do and by the way that we live. Now, there's a sad lesson that goes along with this, with Joseph's bones being carried out of Egypt. And that is the fact that we read in Exodus how Moses took the bones of Joseph and carried them out. They did what Joseph asked them to do. They took his bones along. They preserved them. And I don't know if they kept them, if they put them all in a neat little box that was easy to carry, or if they just took the whole coffin along that he was laid in, or how they did it, I don't know. But however it was done, it was an extra weight that had to be carried. Somebody had to be responsible to haul these bones along. When you're on a journey through the wilderness, you don't want any more weight than what you've got to carry. But somebody had to take these things along. They had to be carried with them. It was a constant physical reminder that they were headed for the promised land, and that Joseph had a faith that he was going to be buried there and that God would keep his word. But sadly, they went to all that bother, and to most of them, the bones never did what Joseph intended to do, what Joseph intended them to do. The bones were a symbol of Joseph's faith in God, and they remembered to bring his bones, but they forgot to bring his faith. They came to the land that God had promised to them. They sent out the spies. The spies brought back an evil report. They said the cities are walled. There's giants in the land. There's no way we're going to be able to overcome these people. We're like grasshoppers in their sight. And they planted fear in the hearts of those people. And those people, the scriptures tell us that they couldn't enter in because of unbelief. They turned on Moses for bringing them out of Egypt to die in the wilderness. The faith of Joseph was nowhere to be found. Well, there were several of them that kept it, but for the most part, it was gone. Hebrews 3, verses 18 and 19. And to whom swear he that he should not enter in, that they should not enter into his rest, but to them that believe not? So we see they could not enter in because of unbelief. Those bones that symbolizes Joseph's great faith were preserved for 400 years and carried all the way from Egypt to the borders of the promised land. Yet when it was time to go in and possess the land, they said, we don't believe. They essentially said, we don't believe that God is going to be able to keep his promise. I think there's a lesson in that for us, and I'm just going to ask you to allow me to make that application, and that's that we do not carry on the bones of tradition and culture without faith that gives those things life. Someone has said that tradition is the living faith of the dead. You've probably all heard that. Tradition is the living faith of the dead, and traditionalism is the dead faith of the living. There's a big difference between those two. And we want to be sure to passing on from generation to generation the living faith of the dead, and not merely a box full of dead bones, not merely the dead faith of the living. So first of all, Joseph gave commandment concerning his bones because he believed. It was evidence that he believed that God was going to keep his word. Secondly, Joseph's request was a choice to identify with his people. Joseph had lived in Egypt most of his life. Joseph was 110 years old when he died. He was 17 when he came to Egypt. That means 93 years he lived in Egypt. 93 out of 110 years. He had an Egyptian wife. He was a ruler of Egypt. He wasn't just a slave or a servant anymore, but he was the second in command of Egypt. He was famous. He was rich. And I'm sure that he had adopted a lot of Egyptian culture. But his command to have his bones carried out of Egypt into Canaan was a very clear statement of identification. Joseph was saying that even though he lived in Egypt and was famous in Egypt, he was not an Egyptian. He wanted everyone to know that he was a son of Jacob. He was casting his lot and placing his identity with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, with the people that God had chosen, the people whom God had given the promise to. He was saying, these are my people, and this is where I belong. And there are a couple of things that make that especially significant. And one of them is the way that Joseph suffered at the hands of his because of what his brothers had done to him. Joseph spent time, we looked at that, in prison as a slave. Years, 13 years of his life. And because of that, it makes it even more remarkable that Joseph chose to identify with them. He could easily have used their wrongs to distance himself from them, even disown his family. He could have taken that victim mentality and said, they have hurt me, they have wronged me, I'm not going to be a part of them anymore. The fact that he embraced and identified with his family was just a further expression of his complete forgiveness. He was willing to let those things go. His choice is also significant considering all that Egypt had to offer him. Joseph, again, he was second in command in Egypt. He basically saved the country from starvation and death. I'm sure that he enjoyed a hero celebrity status in Egypt because of what he had done. And Joseph could have certainly been given that kind of celebrity status and pomp that the Egyptian royalty experienced even in his death. We know from history and archaeology that's even happening today what kind of wealth and honor was given to the ancient pharaohs at their burial. These kings were buried in massive pyramids with lavishly decorated rooms and coffins and gold and riches. And I should have done some research in that and brought it for you this morning, but I'm sure you've read the accounts of some of the kings that they have found buried in Egypt and the lavish wealth that went with it. Those kings were being buried in the time of Joseph. It was that era that was happening. Joseph could have had all of that, but he made the decision to have his bones carried to Canaan and to be buried with his own people. Now, in the Old Testament, Egypt is a type of the world, of its power, its affluence, its riches, and Israel is a type of the church. Israel was the people of God. You could not be an Israelite and an Egyptian. Moses chose the reproach of Christ over all the treasures of Egypt, it tells us in Hebrews. And Joseph chose to identify with Israel, and by doing so, thereby rejecting the glory of Egypt. We must also choose between Israel and Egypt. Jesus said, it's impossible to serve two masters. James said that if you're a friend of the world, you're the enemy of God. Those are two opposites. They cannot mesh together. The world, Israel and Egypt, the world and the kingdom of God are at odds with each other. And regardless of who you are, or how good of a family you've been born into, or what kind of heritage you have, at some point you must choose between the world and the people of God. At some point you must choose between Israel and Egypt, as Joseph did. And I suppose that there may have been some question among the children of Israel with them being in the land of Goshen and being established there and settled there. And they became, I'm sure, did well there, and Joseph took care of them. And perhaps there became some question, and then maybe they started to lose sight of the covenant that God had made with Abraham, and they thought Egypt is just a pretty good place. Well, Joseph kind of took the initiative upon himself and answered that question once and for all when he said, God is surely going to visit you, and you're going to carry my bones with you. I'm not going to be buried here in this land. You're going to take my bones with you. And so he kind of took care of that question, if there was one. Now, there's a more practical application of Joseph identifying with his people that I'd like to make this morning. And this is especially for you young people. Joseph was able to look beyond the flaws, like I said, and there was many flaws in his family. He saw that in his people, God was at work. And I believe he also had a vision of the long-term value, the consequences, the things that were going to go with it, with identifying with the people of God, with his own people, over the people of Egypt. Now, you young people, you've been given something. Your heritage is something of tremendous value. Our people are not perfect. We are not perfect. We've got our bumps and our warts and our flaws, just like Joseph's family had. We're not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But God is at work in our people. I firmly believe that. God is at work in the Anabaptist people, and there is long-term value in staying with your people. Now, this morning we had a little bit of a discussion down in the prayer room about the young people maybe singing at a Lutheran church next Sunday morning, and we didn't really... I guess we were asked if that was okay or something, but we didn't really make a final decision on that. So maybe I'm kind of speaking before I should. But I would just like to say that I guess a word of warning. There's something that we need to remember as Anabaptist people. Sometimes we think we're just different. We just look different than other Christians. We just do things a little differently. But there are some very fundamental differences in our theology between the Anabaptist and Reformed Protestant theology of mainstream Christianity in America today. And we need to be aware of that. Okay, we don't just look a little different than them. We think different than them. And that's important. And so I believe that we can go into a Lutheran church, you know, those people's descendants put our descendants to death. And maybe we should be aware of that. But I believe we can go into a Lutheran church. You as young people can go in there and you can be a testimony and promote the things that you believe, the theology that you have that makes us different from them. We're not by going there and singing there. If you do end up doing that, you're not saying that we are all one big happy family and we are all brothers and sisters in the Lord, no matter what the way you choose to live out your Christianity. That's not what we're saying, but we need to remember there are differences between us and them. So maybe I kind of got off my notes a little bit there. I thought I could bring that in. The thing, Joseph having a vision of the long-term consequences of identifying with his people. See, Joseph understood that if he chose to be an Egyptian and to live in Egypt, then his descendants, his family, his children, and the generations after them are going to have a very, very, very different outcome than what it would have been from choosing to be a part of his own people. And we need to understand that. You as young people need to be aware of that. The choices you make today are going to have consequences. The choices of who you identify with today as Christians are going to have long-term consequences for the generations coming after you. I guess I kind of have that burden because of some of the things that I went through as a young person right here in this very church. You know, a lot of my friends left this church for a more exciting Christianity. And there was a time in my life when I was caught in the middle of that, and I didn't know where I was going to end up. And I had to come to a time when I had to make a decision. It was almost like I was forced to make a decision. of who I was going to identify with. And perhaps you young people today are not necessarily forced to make that decision in the way that some of us were going through that time. Yet I believe you need to make that decision. You need to decide who you're going to identify with and what kind of structure you're going to live out, what kind of worldview you're going to live out your Christianity in. You need to deliberately make that decision. If you just go with the flow, the generations that are coming in after you are going to end up very, very differently from if you deliberately choose to identify with the people, the heritage that you have been given. I think that's all I'll say about that. I want to, the third thing that I think that Joseph, the third reason that I see for the writer of Hebrews to mention Joseph's request to have his bones taken to Canaan was that Joseph had a almost uncanny perception of God's perspective. He had a vision. He was able to somehow see the big picture, and we can see that through the life of Joseph. Throughout the story of Joseph, the sovereignty of God is amazing. It is there. God is at work. God uses the evil works of his brothers, the things that they intended for evil against Joseph, God used to bring about what he wanted to bring about. You know, I can't explain how God can do those things, but he did it through the story of Joseph. He used men's wrong decisions to accomplish what he wanted to do. He used Pharaoh's wife Potiphar's wife and the temptations that Joseph faced. He used that to bring him to the prison, and he used the dreams of Pharaoh to bring Joseph to the place where he wanted him to be in Egypt. And he was doing all of that not just to work in Joseph's life, but because he had a grand scheme and a grand plan to bring his people into Egypt. First of all, he wanted to preserve them from the famine, but even more than that, he wanted them to spend time in Egypt. He wanted them to become bondmen in Egypt because he wanted that type of Egypt and Israel, the world and the people of God. He wanted to set the stage for the death angel and the Passover lamb, for a type of the sacrifice of Jesus Christ and how he was going to bring Jesus the Messiah into the world through the nation of Israel. God had a huge plan in place, and Joseph didn't understand all of it, but somehow Joseph was able to keep the perspective of God's bigger vision and plan. He was able to think above and beyond himself. He didn't just think about his own aches and ailments when he was sitting in prison, but somehow he understood that God is doing something big. And I've started this series on Joseph by talking about that, and I guess I'm going to end it by talking about that again. God was the mastermind behind it all. He was working in the shadows. He was moving, making things happen. And many times Joseph couldn't see them, but he has this great plan in place. And somehow, even here at the end of his life, when Joseph says, God is surely going to visit you and take you out of this place, he is still understanding that God has a greater perspective and a great plan in place for the nation of Israel. He remembers the promise that God made to Abraham. He remembers that God has said that through him all the nations of the world are going to be blessed. And I'm sure he doesn't understand how it's all going to work, but somehow he knows that God has greater things in store, and he recognizes that. And his request to have his bones transported to Canaan and to be buried there is a testimony to that fact. And that is also how we need to live our lives. We are part, we talked about in the book of Daniel, about that great kingdom that God has set up, that he's going to destroy all the other kingdoms of the world. We're part of the greatest plan and design that God has ever put in place. That's that his kingdom is going to take over the kingdoms of this world. It's not just about me and my salvation and what I like to do and live. We are part of a much greater cause. Okay, and when we can get a hold of that, I believe it really makes Christianity worth living for. When we are part of that greater purpose and greater cause, it will motivate us to serve and to obey and to live out our faith in tangible ways like Joseph did. Let's kneel for prayer.